Good morning, everybody.
Greetings.
This is September 23rd, 2020, and we're on episode 99. It's the last episode before the next episode. But, you know, numbers matter. So, like, somehow,
yeah.
I think between this episode and when we come back in about a week, the world will be a different place.
Yeah, well, given how things are going, it's quite possible.
It's not a hard thing to say.
But it's kind of hard to believe, like 99 episodes. I mean, I just, like, where did the time go, Mark? Where did it go?
I've been sitting indoors a lot.
Yeah.
It's weird because we started doing this with some intentionality, but it was also a little bit like, hey, let's start doing this thing and see what happens.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, this is, we think about each episode, but there's some casualness to it. So the idea that we're somehow 99 episodes later seems like, wow, this is like finding out you've been married for 25 years. Where did all the time go?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm Daniel Wolper. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. And yeah, and today we're talking about some overlapping things, mostly. So just to lay out some of the things that we're going to talk about, how in my mind, at least, they connect. So we have wildfires, which are horrible, right? Mm-hmm. And if you tend to be left of center, you tend to think, well, this happens because of climate change. But apparently, if you're right of center, Antifa starts fires. So that's... And this is a conspiracy theory that is like, man, no one with any legitimacy believes this, but it's getting a lot of traction. Meanwhile, we have this increase, you know, so you have militants like driving around looking for Antifa fire starters in Oregon.
You know, Antifa is quickly becoming like, you know, Einstein's unified theory of everything that he was looking for. Like,
yes.
No matter what. It's Antifa. Good, bad, indifferent. You know, it's just Antifa is maybe the God particle in physics. It just glues everything together.
Yeah.
Even as it doesn't even really exist at all.
So as you have this like ridiculous scapegoating of Antifa as though it's a sizable organization and anarchists as though there's a lot of us. I've noticed more and more as the conversation, like there's always this backlash that happens. So I've talked about this a lot of times, but in Minneapolis had all these people starting to say, yes, let's defund the police. But then now quickly, some of these same people are saying we should actually increase the budget to make it easier for cops to do their jobs well, which is predictable. And so suddenly these people who were on the front edge of pushing against police brutality, I'm seeing more and more of the middle saying, you know what? These leftists that are still agitating, they're making things worse for us. In a lot of ways, they're just as bad as the far right. And so then there becomes this conversation about extremism. Usually it's some sort of horseshoe theory kind of idea that the really shitty people are on the edges, they're extreme. And in the middle, you have the sensible, thoughtful people. And so I often will say, what about the extreme middle? And people don't even know how to understand that. Because in their mind, middle status quo is comfortable and doesn't do any more harm. It's just holding down the fort. It's the extreme people that we have to worry about. Without everyone knowing what extreme means.
Yeah. And of course, that analysis really is a very white analysis in our culture. There are plenty of black people that understand the extreme middle, and there are all the nice white people that are out to kill them. But yeah, in the white world, especially yeah. The nice white liberal world, even the nice white conservative world, there's this sense that, you know, we in the middle are these sensible, reasonable people. And anything outside of that is the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the, you know, if you use the word extreme just as like how far you are away from the middle, and without any pejorative quality. Like, if you're super far left, which I'm super far left, meaning that if I imagine the world as I'd like it to be, we wouldn't even have currency, right? We'd have things would be owned in common, you know, no hierarchies at all, blah, blah, blah. So that's far left. So in that sense, I'm extreme. But if usually when people say the word extreme, they mean militant, fringe, unhinged. And so this is where it gets weird to me that somehow people think you can't be those things and be in the middle. When last time I looked, United States to maintain its status quo, we're not talking about just when there's a Republican in office, whenever we've got somewhere near 800 military bases, we bomb the hell out of everybody. These things seem extreme and militant to me. And that's to me, the extremist middle is how willing you are, how comfortable you are with violence being used to maintain your goals could be one way of describing extreme.
Yeah.
And we have directed
you know, it's sort of like the big number thing that we were talking about, I think, that, you know, when you say, well, you know, the war budget is $700 billion and right, we've got bases all around the world and, you know, Obama dropped 80,000 drone strikes on the Middle East. Like, those are numbers that don't even really compute.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
But then you say, you know, one guy burned down a store, and you're like, oh my God, that's a disaster. Now, obviously, that sucks for that one guy, but compared to the violence of the middle, you know, it's a total insignificant blip on the radar. And yet one is taken as this great norm that all of us reasonable people think is okay. And the other one is taken as this total threat to the good order of society, which in some ways is kind of hilarious when you think about it.
Yeah, and so we have the president issuing an executive order. I don't know if it came out as an official executive order or he just threatened it.
No. It was, he wanted the Justice Department to do it. So his little lapdog, William Barr, did it.
Okay. To declare these anarchist jurisdictions, which depending on how you look at it, is it an oxymoron or not?
I was going to say, in and of itself, an anarchist jurisdiction is a little bit of an oxymoron.
You can have council anarchism where theoretically you can make it work. But yeah, generally, I don't think he is savvy to the nuances of that. So you have these anarchist jurisdictions, and you have, just to bring in Breonna Taylor, you have the mayor of Louisville basically declaring martial law, low-level martial law, emergency,
right,
in anticipation of this afternoon's declaration from the grand jury about these cops that murdered her. And what this does is it sets up the situation where more and more I see the people kind of in the middle, they see what Trump is doing is bad, but they say, well, you know, it's kind of understandable. Look at all these anarchists in the streets causing troubles.
Right.
And a lot of people in so many subtle ways are feeding into Trump's way of framing it. It's happening more and more. And this terrifies the hell out of me, to be honest, because we talk about these things over and over again in this transmission, not because we're so boring and can only talk about the same things, but because of
it might be.
this stuff is alarming. And I feel like we're still kind of asleep at the wheel, proverbially speaking. Hitler was able to come to power largely because people got to the point where they were more afraid of communists than fascists. So,
yeah. And, you know, the thing is, I do think that Hitler is not the only person, right? So we're constantly, you know, yes, bringing out the Hitler example, and that seems long ago and far away. So, you know, this is what Erdogan did in Turkey. Years ago, it was exactly the same thing. You know, he said, You know, the communists are out to get us. The PKK are out to get us. You know, there's this big threat to civil society. And so we need to take over. You know, Duarte in the Philippines has done the exact same thing. You know, the drug dealers, there was the drug dealers. The drug dealers are out to get us. And so, you know, he's just, I mean, literally it is now illegal to just shoot drug dealers and drug addicts in the streets.
Yeah.
And there are now special mortuaries that just specialize in dead drug dealers. So, I mean, this right wing insurgency is happening all over the world.
Yeah.
And yeah, it always follows this very similar kind of playbook. And a big part of it is convincing, you know, the nice middle property owner people that, well, you know, there just really is this big threat from the left. I mean, this was done in the 60s here, right? The, you know, all of the protesters, the various black freedom fighters were all labeled as communists. You know, then it wasn't Marxists and anarchists, then it was communists. I mean, they weren't communists at all, as far as anyone could tell, but yeah, it's that same kind of process. And then you know, all the law and order people get terrified and then are very willing to allow the government to clamp down on things.
Yeah, and this, and it's impacting people in so many ways, these narratives, in some ways more subtle, like, so the idea of throwing every protester who is involved in anything that wasn't just them standing peacefully with a sign that's nice, safe distance from the police officers. Anyone who did more than that is like, well, they kind of bring it upon themselves or making things hard for the rest of us. Once you get into that terrain, you are firmly on the page of maintaining the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and when you do that, it's hard for me not to think that you're okay with more black people being shot as long as you can still go to the TGI Fridays that had been burnt down. I don't know if there's any TGI Fridays. That's wishful thinking, actually.
All right, we got some comments coming in. And,
thanks for being the first one, maybe the only one to get that this title of this episode is named after the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire. CK writes, Jason is here. Jason is the subcomandante leader of the Antifa, just for those who don't know. I don't remember how I stumbled across these sessions, but I really appreciate them. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm glad that, you know, some of you have been watching for a long time, and that feels good.
I know.
Been through this together. Mark writes, we live under a system that holds property as something holy while human life is expendable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fortunately, that's true. Ray writes, Minneapolis didn't get labeled as an anarchist jurisdiction. Do better.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, and we mentioned this, I think, yesterday or the day before, yeah. How, you know, it's very interesting that the three cities that got labeled as anarchist jurisdictions are in states that pretty much are blue states in the election. And that, right, that Minneapolis, which has had way more property destruction and kind of uprisings than any other place, but is in a state that Trump is trying to turn red, did not get labeled. So one has to be at least a little cynical about which places got designated as anarchist jurisdictions.
Yeah, Kathleen has said that Kansas City is not an official anarchist
state. Right. I know. You guys have got to step it up there, Kathleen.
Mark writes, to be fair, Wall Street is a den of anarcho-capitalists. Sadly, that is the only flavor of anarchism which is acceptable in our system. If you acknowledge that they're anarchists at all, that's one of the big... For people who love to know about how anarchists fight amongst each other, like, all anarchists tend to like hating on these groups of people who call themselves anarcho-capitalists because... That's an oxymoron, to be honest. But
yeah, I mean, Mark, could you guys say more about that? I mean, what's
so anarchism? like anarchism, besides being, it's used by people to sound scary and destructive, but like if you're a self-described anarchist, you're against hierarchies that are that are baked in. And it comes out of socialist thought that we get socialism through mutual relationship rather than being forced top down. And so capitalism is considered one of the big bads that anarchists are fighting against. Well, in the United States, we had people who are libertarian who are like, well, I hate the government. I guess I'm an anarchist too. But instead of being one of those pinko socialist ones, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, which doesn't make sense because they still believe in the ability to use lethal force to protect your private property. They believe any hierarchy is good as long as it's entered into willingly. So if you're a sweatshop owner, that's okay because they don't have to work there. Like that kind of way of thinking is just so foreign to anyone else who's an anarchist. And there's this big resentment out there. Like, how dare you take our word anarchism and apply it towards your exactly opposite ideology? So now we're going to get lumped in together. That's kind of where the argument goes. So Marx, capitalism in effect seeks to supplant government control with corporate control. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that in America, and this is something kind of fascinating that's going on, right? That distinguishing between this libertarian strain of things and the evil anarchism that the government is trying to push on us. Because again, in its, I want to say sort of good form or pure form, the idea of anarchism is that there is not only a great deal of individual responsibility, but also a great deal of mutual responsibility.
That's right.
And in libertarianism, it's just the individual. It's all about just me. I'm out for myself. And so yeah, in a lot of ways, like hedge fund managers are sort of the ultimate libertarians. I mean, they don't give a shit about anything except making tons and tons of money. They don't care whether companies do well, whether they do badly, whether the stock market goes up, whether it goes down. It's just, did I bet the right way? And so there is an anarchism to that, in that you really do not care about any sort of cohesive structure. But it's not an anarchism related to the political philosophy of anarchism. It's more like, this libertarian chaos. And really what's, the groups that are actually dangerous in this country right now are these libertarian, right-wing militias who basically say, we want to be able to do whatever we want, and we've got lots of guns to be able to promote that. And, of course, the people in our government right now are supporting those folks, so... I mean, the whole thing is, if it wasn't so terrifying and weird, if we weren't living here, there would be kind of the sort of humorous irony to the whole thing.
Nick asks, I wonder why the delay on the announcement of the indictment decision in Louisville. I mean, I'm assuming it's because people aren't going to be happy and they needed to delay so that they could get the... the police,
get the fences up.
just get everything primed for protests. I mean, I don't know why else they would delay. Or maybe they don't know for sure, but they're worried that could be an outcome and they have to be prepared for it. It's an eventuality, like the potential of that. But yeah, it's just to be prepared for protests.
Yeah.
Mark writes, most anarcho-capitalists can't see that corporate control is the end result. I could spend days talking about anarchism, but just to move on from that, it's definitely absurd to call corporate control of any kind of anarchy when it's really corporate totalitarianism. This is part of the is part of the problem that Americans have in our imaginations, is we separate politics from economics and think of politics as a bad thing that you shouldn't even talk about at Thanksgiving, but that economics is just the natural state of things. It's neutral.
Well, capitalist totally, economics is just the state of things.
Yeah, that's what they think. Like capitalism, this is just what happens when people get to make decisions for themselves. Right. We actually believe that crap, which is just so not true.
You know, I mean, I think Americans view capitalism kind of like one of the things that God did in the first 6 days of creation. You know, it's like God made the creepy crawling things of the earth, and then God made capitalism, and then God made plants, sort of like that. It's one of those things, it's just part of the created order.
Yeah, we just think it's transactions, like it's just the next step of bartering, and that it only gets bad when the government steps in. Right. Without ever realizing, in order for you to have private property rights, that has to be recognized by the government. Like owning property, like a plot of land in perpetuity, is already government intervention. And then being able to call the cops to defend it is the most base kind of, it's the most sacred thing in this country, and it's the root of all kinds of evil. Yeah, we could talk about the doctrine of discovery and how it's just a holdover from all kinds of ways of being able to claim land and say it's mine forever, how bizarre that is. But we just don't even think about that part of it.
No. There's up next there.
Greed is never an attractive label.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not.
Daniel writes, here in Denver, we talked about this the other day, several protest leaders, BLM and others, were charged with kidnapping because the crowd surrounded the Aurora police station, and so the cops couldn't go home on time. Very COINTELPRO, like this type of targeting by the state.
Yeah.
That it's ridiculous.
Yeah. ridiculous. No, and Daniel, we did a whole episode on this last Friday. I mean, it's really bad. And then the really interesting thing about Colorado, so it goes even deeper in terms of this kind of state control. So in Colorado, they do not have to even have a bail hearing for a week. And so basically they've been able to keep a number of these people in jail for a week, even though groups had raised money to pay for their bail. And in most jurisdictions, you cannot hold somebody for more than 48 hours, and you have to have a bail hearing. and so that's one of the laws that some of these activists are trying to get changed, because basically you're allowed to hold somebody, for a long time in prison.
All right. Ray writes here, living in Oregon, Trump may be a significant source of the Antifa boogeyman mentality, but we must recognize that law enforcement, pretty much at all levels, buy into and enforces this idea. Our local police and sheriffs speak routinely of busloads of Antifa visiting our town, coming to burn our giant American flag, etc. Additionally, our law enforcement are regularly relational with the 3%ers. And the far right militia groups. It is no longer safe in my small town to openly identify as anarchist.
And this is absolutely true. And in fact, the Aurora interim police chief, when she was explaining to the city council why they gassed people with violins, including small children, said, oh, well, we were in contact with police from all over the country, and they were telling us that Antifa was coming, and we had intelligence that Antifa was there. And she showed these photographs of like people with bicycle helmets on, and of course half the crowd had biked to the protest. They said, well, yes, and there were people there who were going to assist the protesters. And the one obviously far right wing city council member said, oh, so what you're saying, I mean, this is a direct quote. I watched this whole thing. This guy was unbelievable. He said, so what you're saying is they had a combat medical station ready for when they attacked the police department. And she's like, yes, that's true. That was the intelligence that we had. It was all complete bullshit. It was, but we've seen this consistently. I mean, we saw this in Minneapolis. We've seen this everywhere. Is that, yeah, I mean, this becomes the narrative that all of these police and departments buy into. And again, in terms of this radical middle thing, the problem is that the extreme middle, you know, all of these white folks have grown up with and assume that the police and the state are on their side. And so it's just so easy, you know, and this is this formation thing we keep talking about. It's so easy then to just fall into this narrative. It's like, well, the cops are on our side. The state is on our side. They don't lie to us. So this is what they're telling us. So this must be true. Right? And there's no critical thinking skills coming out of any of that.
No, and so that, like, while in the thick of things happening here with the protests after George Floyd's murder, I was seeing articles. We were seeing articles come out from all the major press about what's happening, and their sources were the police. Like, this is a bizarre thing. So even talking about a free press, like we talked about, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Look, all these institutions that are establishment, like, all know each other. And so when, you know, the Pioneer Press or the Star Tribune needs a quote about what kind of threat the police are facing, they call the police, and then they just write down as though it's official.
Right.
The Next Door app is a series called Snitch Door app. That's the one.
That's our leading contender.
Yeah, so if anyone's got something better, send an idea for the Next Door app. They're like, again, this is a private company that's trying to monetize our relationships as neighbors. The only official things that come out are from law enforcement or the mayor's office will announce these things. And so this, as an anarchist, like, I see this as like, oh, this is the collusion of powerful people. This is how it works. There's no neutrality in this. There's nothing more. The police aren't officially anything.
Right.
They don't. So how do they get into that position of power? It's not like we all had direct democracy and installed them.
No. Well, and you know, and this is continuing here in Minneapolis. I mean, last night, one of the ward councilmen had this big Zoom meeting. And the police chief was there, this council member was there, a number of other city staff people were there. And I tuned in for a little while. And so the one thing that the police chief kept hitting on was, well, civility. There's no civility right now. We have to be nice and civil, you know. And it was kind of like, oh, the poor policeman, you know, people are being mean to them. And we just have to be civil and all calm down. And then, yes, we can talk about reform. And then the council member, and so I was commenting on, you know, pushing back on all this on the little Zoom chat. The council member said, oh, one of the really great things during the protests was how the neighborhoods all came together and all formed these groups. Well, the reason the neighborhood came together was because the state intentionally lied, scared the crap out of everybody, said that hordes of Antifa were coming to burn their neighborhoods down.
Or even armies of white supremacists.
Yeah, armies of white supremacists. They were both. I guess they were sharing rides to town or something.
Yeah, no. Again, horde theory. It's these white supremacists and these anarchists in equal measure that are a threat to our lovely society.
And it did a great job of undermining the focus of the uprising. So the focus got off of the uprising and onto, let's defend our property against these hordes of extremists that are coming to burn our neighborhoods. And it was all complete bullshit. But now they're using that as a way of talking about, oh, isn't it wonderful that the city is coming together and we can be civil to the cops and everything's just going to be really nice.
Well, the neighbors coming together, it's fascinating because so in our neighborhood, like, you know, people come together and there's a big cadre of folks who are like, we're going to try to do stuff without ever calling the police unless there's an imminent threat. And so they try to enforce discipline on how the neighborhood responds. But over time, like, what happened is it became a neighborhood watch group. People became hyper alert every time. Seriously, every time there's fireworks or a gunshot, which before this happened, when it's warm out, you hear gunshots all the time. in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, oh, it's more violence because, and we link the violence directly to the protests. And then every time there's a gunshot, it goes out on the app, like, so we all know. And so everyone's in a heightened state. And so what happens is the ability, discipline can never outpace white fear. And so what happens is our white neighbor, as everyone keeps being afraid and afraid, eventually there's no way of maintaining discipline. It becomes a quick way for people to hyper respond and call the cops. And this is our neighborhood coming together. It's just white scared people huddling. Yeah.
All right. Let's hit the comments. We're kind of getting away from them. Sorry, guys.
Adam writes, that's what you get when you allow people to say whatever they want because everyone's opinions matter. Like, no. Sometimes people are wrong and we need to correct them, not respect their opinion or accept our differences. Sigh. Yeah.
All right. God, you're such an extremist, Adam.
So extremist. Timothy writes, one of the things, some would say a few things, Catholic social teaching got right was when they said, quote, economic systems were made for people and not the other way around. So, you know, I feel like a lot of the Catholic social teaching is really solid, especially on economics. In terms of having humanity, it's like it's a humanist sort of way of thinking about economic values. And I think that's important and good. And it's worth reading some of the stuff from Pope Francis about the environment and the economy. It's pretty good stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're willing to keep a grand mural of the apotheosis of George Washington, everyone should Google that, and the nation's capital building, then things are going to get weird. Yeah. Adam writes, it's a nefarious thing to use tolerance as a wedge between justice and intolerance and abuse.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, this is, you know, Adam, you're so right. I mean, this is the favorite right-wing tool right now. It's, you know, you try to talk about anything from a fact-based point of view, and people are just like, well, that's just your opinion. I have a different opinion, you know. And my opinion on the pandemic is just as valid as Dr. Fauci's opinion, because it's all just opinions.
Well, yeah, same. I could go up
like all right. No, don't do it, Mark.
All right. CK writes, the fact Kentucky is getting read for riots isn't ready for riots is an indictment.
Yeah, of course.
Gus writes, I have appreciated the articles written as if they were the foreign correspondents in some other developing country. Those are great. If the exact same things were happening in Indonesia or Botswana or Mexico, it'd be framed differently. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. If anyone hasn't read those, like, we take so much stuff for granted. And then when we hear about, like, violence breaking out in India, it's always about these factions and tribal conflict. Which you could use the same language for what's happening here, but we don't because we anesthetize things because America's great. That's so fascinating to read it from a different perspective. Susan writes, two issues. One, people have lost the ability to think critically and evaluate information for credibility. Not a lot of people have had it, but you're right. There's definitely a tendency away from that for sure. And as public trust erodes, no one has confidence that our system will in any way respond rightly. That's a dilemma. Well, you know, there's a lot we could say about this. I mean, the system hasn't worked for a lot of people. And one of the things that Karl Marx and others talk about is like that capitalism has intrinsic conflicts in its logic. And that at a certain point, there's enough strain where the fractures happen and you have to start using naked force in order to maintain things. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable under a system that's got so much flaws and so much bloat.
Yeah. Well, and then I think, Susan, when you layer the reality TV mentality on top of it, right? I mean, I feel like this is one thing that liberals, especially intellectual liberals, just haven't gotten about Trump, is that Trump is functioning with the reality TV mentality. And so if you think worldwide wrestling, then suddenly he makes a lot more sense. And in that world, right, there is no truth, there is no facts, there is no morality even. There's just chaos and entertainment and, you know, the more extreme and crazy, the better. and everybody's got a weird name and everybody insults each other and people just hit each other with chairs. And yeah, I mean, that if that's then suddenly the way you're trying to run your society, it's there are a lot of problems with that. But it is, going back to the anarcho-capitalists, it's actually a great cover for those, for that whole realm of people, because now you know, the super corporate titans just really can do whatever the heck they want because everybody's distracted by all the nonsense.
No, and that's part of the brilliance of this moment. Like, it's almost premeditated that the people who consistently get to thrive in social turmoil, especially as it goes farther right, are the powerful corporatists. Because then, like, now it's like why Biden is somehow so palatable to so many people is because he's so much better than the alternative. Well, Biden still represents corporate interests. Corporations, if Trump's in power, will still have a lot of money, and they will if Biden's in power. So they get to win no matter what. The only thing they really are afraid of is a left insurgency, which is why leftists are always, it's amplified how bad, you know, like we have to downplay fascism in our country as though, and call it alt-right, because we don't want to just call people racist to their face, but we can be as caustic as we want about the far left, generally speaking. I mean, it depends on where you live. Tom writes, inaccuracy in reporting, gunshots is fear, natural responses, just opinions or feelings. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
I tend to think we're okay. Adam writes, when everything is an opinion, nothing's real. When nothing's real, it doesn't matter what you do or say, and there is no accountability, no checks and balances.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Taught high school, combating reality TV much. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. This is all part of our formation.
Yeah.
Adam Rice, what did you say? Almost by the time. Well, well, I do think there are some people that design this stuff, but I think sometimes things get out from under us. Like, I don't know if you could have horrible systems without individuals intentionally planning it, because systems are complex. Well, I just want to point out the complexity of that.
Yeah, and the systems have a life of their own, you know, and they absolutely do sort of mobilize resources, energy, people to serve their needs. And, you know, I think we're seeing that very, very clearly. I mean, you know, a lot of people are talking about how hard things are right now. A lot of people have made a ton of money over the last 6 months.
Oh, my God. Yeah. A
ton of money. And not just the top five or six people, like lots and lots of people have made a ton of money over this period of time. And that's something that is not reported on the news or spent a lot of time analyzing. And that is intentional, right? Yeah. They don't want people to be distracted by that or thinking about that.
And once you're rich enough, then you can enter into the kind of gamesmanship of it all.
Yeah.
And exploit the markets. Which is something that most of us just can't do. So why we're screwed and they're not.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, keep your eye out for what happens this afternoon in Louisville. We are going to be off until Friday, October 2nd, when it will be episode 100. And we're looking forward to whatever great party you guys have planned for us.
Yeah. Just a final word from Adam. We'll put these in, but no more. Adam writes, definitely some things aren't a huge evil plot, even though there are plenty of those. This comes back to the idea of the banality of evil. Yeah, I think that's right. Timothy writes, with all the other noise generated by Trump, we can forget how much he has done for the 1%. $1.9 trillion tax giveaway 2017, radical environmental, consumer, and labor rights, deregulations of corporations, and raking off almost half of the $2 trillion CARES Act. And Gus is worried, well, we're gone. Who will protect us from the robot birds? I think you're all ready to stand in your own
to battle
fight.
Antifa will take care of the robot birds.
Yes.
Or hack them and take them over. All right. See y'all.
See ya.